Everyone tells you while you're pregnant that fear is your enemy when you're in labor. If you're in fear, your entire body closes up.
Yuliana had her first pregnancy all planned out to the last detail. She was ready, and she was confident it would all work out. Except, and parents listening probably know what I'm going to say here, once you go into labor, the best laid plans have a way of going out the window. So when it came time for Yuliana to push, you can figure what happened next.
I was using a midwife, and you can still have a midwife and go to the hospital. And I'm just not feeling well at all. And I'm definitely starting to panic a little bit. So they end up coming, and she checked me, and she said, "You're only 2 centimeters, you need to be 4 to go to the hospital, so why don't you go into the bathtub, and we'll see if we can get things moving." And next thing I know, it's an hour later, I get out of the bathtub, it's excruciating trying to get checked, but we check, and the midwife, she said, "Oh my God, you are at 10 centimeters. I can't believe it. I'm going to have to do this at home." So we get out all the towels, every towel in the house, and we had 2 midwives and my mom and my husband in this tiny bathroom. And I'm scared. I'm scared to do this at home because what if something goes wrong? It was just really getting to that point of I need to push and hopefully everything is okay. And when that happened, I'm basically on my knees and I remember catching Jacob myself. And I sit back and I'm holding Jacob and it's pure relief. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yuliana found the courage she needed to trust everything would be okay during labor. And now, baby Jacob is a healthy kid who's changed her and her husband's lives forever. We all want to live healthy, happy lives and wish the same for our friends and our loved ones. But it doesn't always work out that way. I'm Meg Wilcox, and today, stories of everyday bravery in sickness and in health. Life isn't a dress rehearsal. Starting a family or a business, you take the leap and trust you'll land on your feet. This is Everyday Bravery, a podcast about having the courage to live your dream. From Prudential, bring your challenges. It's the call no one wants to get. A family member's been hurt. They're in the hospital and they're dying. You race to their side. You brace yourself for the difficult decisions that will come to face what happens next. You have a million questions, and the hospital has even more for you. But one big, important question that may come, is this person an organ donor?
I have always felt the greatest gift of all, whether given or received, is the gift of time. With my new heart, I now have time in abundance. Time to work at the market, to spend with family and friends, to putter in my garden, to enjoy whatever opportunities life presents.
That's Carolyn Cox Disney. She's reading from an extraordinary letter she and her sister Belinda received 5 years ago.
When I lay on my left side and I feel my heart beating, I am filled with the wonder of it all. As I think of the person in whom this heart used to beat.
When they first received the letter, all they knew was the writer's first name, Julie. And this person, Julie, now had their father's heart. Carolyn and Belinda's dad, Robert Cox, was 57 years old. He lived in Nova Scotia, thousands of miles away from Calgary, Alberta, where the two sisters live.
He was such a good guy. He was just always wanted to make people happy.
His hugs.
My dad was a huge flirt.
His laughter.
He just always made me feel like I was the most special person in the world.
His unconditional love.
That's what I miss the most about him. My name is Belinda Garcia, and I am Robert Cox's youngest daughter.
My name is Carolyn Cox Disney, and I am Bobby Cox's eldest daughter.
I was at work and I got a phone call from my cousin saying that my dad had hit his head and that he'd had to go to the hospital. I was like, "Oh, it's okay. It's my dad. He'll be fine." I think they knew pretty quickly once he got to the hospital that he wasn't going to survive. So that would have been
April 14th, 2011. And then from there, everything went very quickly. We ended up talking to the organ donator coordinator and doing multiple questions back and forth on the phone while making arrangements to travel to Halifax to see my dad. We were making decisions as they came up. So for us, it was like, what do we want to do? What would our dad want to do? What would his choice be?
I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into the fact that there could be somebody in the same hospital at the same time waiting for his organs.
In fact, that was exactly the case.
So we were both there at the exact same time, and he was on one floor and I was on the other waiting for a heart.
Julie Lyons is a retired flight attendant. Back in April 2011, she was in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and she was fighting for her life.
It's called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. It means your heart muscle thickens, and then over the years, that impedes the flow of blood to your heart.
Her heart had been failing for years. At one point, doctors fitted her with a pump to help with the blood flow. Julie hoped this pump would mean she'd never need a transplant, that it would see her through to the end of her life. But as it frequently happens with pumps, it became infected.
So I went to the hospital, very sick with that, and the surgeon came to see me on Sunday afternoon, and he said, that's it now. He said, the infection is in your entire heart chamber, and the only thing that will save you now is a new heart. And I was shocked. Well, first you phone your mother and cry a lot, and it's just really hard to absorb.
With that infection threatening her life, Julie was moved up to the first spot on the organ donor wait list. 6 days after that, around supper time,
one of the nurses came and she said, you won't be getting your medications tonight because they think they have a heart for you.
I just remember like walking into the hospital room where my dad was all hooked up to machines. And I just didn't really believe that he was brain dead. And I think, in fact, I even asked the doctors at one point if they could show me the scan of his brain.
My sister and I were sitting on either side of his bed and holding his hands. And the doctor did come in and confirm that, yes, indeed, he was brain dead.
I had been moved to another floor by that point. And then all the nurses from my old floor came down to wish me good luck and give me a hug. And that was really, really nice. And the doctor came by and he just said, you know, we're going tomorrow. And I said, I really hope you'll just do your best for me. I couldn't really think of anything to say. I did wonder about the heart, but I didn't have a really strong yearning to know, because I knew also that it was a time of grief for another family. And so I, of course, felt, I felt grief for the family. It wasn't one of my number one objectives to find out whose heart it was. Because I think that is something that comes later.
Neither Carolyn nor Belinda knew who received their father's organs. Hospitals keep that information confidential. So they couldn't know Julie had their dad's heart. But through the hospital's transplant coordinator, they gave permission to be contacted. A few months later, Julie's letter arrived.
Dear family, it is late on a Saturday afternoon, and I've just come home from working my afternoon shift at the local farmer's market. Probably my happiest day of the week.
The sisters shared the letter with the family they still had in Halifax.
Yeah, it was very surreal.
It's not like anyone was on a mission to find Julie, but at least they now had a first name.
And Julie wasn't anonymous anymore.
And then an aunt, Bob Cox's sister, read a profile on Julie in the local paper. It didn't take much to put two and two together.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It's very uncommon for families of donors and recipients to meet. But after Carolyn and Belinda discovered who Julie was, the three of them began exchanging emails. They enjoyed having that connection. 4 years went by.
We had been writing back and forth, but we were sort of virtual people to each other.
And then, last fall, they decided to meet in person.
was like, okay, this is real. Like, I can't believe this is actually happening. We're going to meet Julie.
Who knows? Maybe she would hate us. Maybe we wouldn't like her.
I honestly was a bit of a wreck.
Very suspenseful. It was a little nerve-wracking.
And it was very overwhelming.
But to think that they're going to meet me and actually come to the realization that their father's heart is still here. And it's in me. And
the meeting took place in the arrivals hall of Toronto's Pearson International Airport.
I actually see them.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, Belinda.
Oh my God,
Karen.
I'm really well. How are you?
So good. So nice to see you.
I know. Oh, so nice to meet you.
It is so nice to meet you.
So great.
Lots of excitement. I have to give you one more hug.
I know.
This is pretty cool.
Very cool.
I do too.
You don't want you
to. Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Can I say
thank you?
Our pleasure.
Because I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for you. So thank you.
It's our pleasure. You know what? Our dad's here. We're watching this whole thing. And he's, yeah, he is. He's here and he's.
He is. And he's smiling.
He's smiling.
Oh, he's laughing.
He would be so thrilled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Cool.
Whew. I know, right?
Okay.
The three of them spent a weekend together. Long lunches, a stroll through the farmer's market. At a quiet moment when the sisters leaned in close, stethoscope in hand, and listened to their father's heart.
My sister listened to my dad's heart first, and I was kind of standing behind her, and I was really like, I hate crying in front of people, and so I was doing my best, and I'm choking back some tears and hoping nobody notices.
That was over the top. Hearing my dad's heartbeat was, to me, it was hearing him looking down on us saying, everything is great. Saying, yeah, you guys did this. We did this. This is awesome.
And then when it was my turn, I just got a big smile on my face. And it was like, I don't know, there wasn't any sadness at all. I wasn't choked up. I was just in complete awe and amazement.
And this was giving me so much more appreciation of the moment. I think I honestly can say that I live, you know, every day is a gift. My needs have become very simple. My biggest need now is just to get up in the morning and get going. And if I can go out for a walk, or if I can see something lovely or meet someone nice, or that's all I need to keep me going now.
For Belinda and Carolyn, meeting the woman who was saved by their father's heart put his death in a new light. But if there's anything Julie can say about that gift, she already wrote it.
It is not really just my heart. It is your heart too, and the heart of your loved one. Every breath I take is a shared breath, and with every heartbeat I feel your sadness for the loss of a loved one, and immense gratitude for the joy and the time you have given me. I will shelter this heart, hug it within my body, and care for it as long as I live. With eternal thanks, your friend Julie.
Belinda and Carolyn didn't know it at the time, but their father, Robert Cox, had in fact listed himself as an organ donor. Julie received his heart. His liver and kidneys also saved the lives of other patients. Thanks to producer Tina Pittaway for helping us with that story. From health scares to devoting your life to helping others, people find their everyday courage in many ways.
I started having chest pain. Felt like a horse was kicking me right in the heart. It would come up when I was running. And my mother died when I was young of a heart attack. I've always kind of feared that was going to happen to me. So my significant other actually got me because I was too frightened to go and get checked out medically. And I totally cleared. And I told myself I would run through this pain. And that is the bravest thing that I did for myself that I can think of in a long time.
I tried to get into nursing school, and I didn't get in the first time. It didn't change my mind about wanting to become a nurse. It just made me think, you know, maybe I'm not the right kind of person to be a nurse. I would say it changed after I'd been a nurse for about 4 or 5 years, probably.
You know, I found out I have a kind of an abscess on my lung that's affecting my heart, and, you know, I have to sign over a power of attorney to my dad. You know, I'm 42 years old, and I need my family's help right now, and you know, and that's okay. So I think it's brave to ask for help.
Every day, you could be faced with a moment where you have to be brave. Tell us about those moments. Share your everyday bravery on social media. Look up Prudential online and use the hashtag Everyday Bravery. Everyday Bravery from Prudential. Bring your challenges. It's hard to see anyone living with cancer, but when it's our kids, it can feel especially unfair. No one should have to go through that much pain and fear, least of all a child. But there are people like Morgan Webb to help them. Morgan's an artist and an entertainer. She paints giant, whimsical murals in children's hospitals. Morgan also sometimes visits the kids at home, as she often did for her young friend, Ella. Producer Jenny Ament shares the story of how Morgan finds the courage to face childhood cancer, one paintbrush stroke at a time.
Sometimes, when Morgan visited Ella, she'd come over dressed like a bunny.
I had a bunny face, had bunny ears on, and I had a carrot painted on my finger, and I had my finger up to my mouth, and I said, "Did someone want to paint bunnies with carrots today?" And she just laughed. Her shoulders would shake. She'd like snort, and her shoulders would shake when she laughed. She was really cute.
That's how it went between them most Tuesdays.
It's worth it, the embarrassment, to make her laugh.
Morgan would come over, and they would paint. Ella loved to paint, and Morgan loved that 7-year-old kid.
Normally, that age, you know, they're in my art class. I'm still Miss Morgan, and they're my students. With Ella, maybe it was just because she wasn't going to be here long or whatever, but I just really considered her a friend. We didn't talk like, you know, my adult friends would talk or anything like that, but we just, I don't know. I have adult friends too, but they frown upon me wearing face paint.
Ella was very sick. It was in her brain, and it was the kind of cancer that couldn't be operated on. Something that Morgan would maybe forget, or maybe could ignore, while she played bunny rabbit and painted all sorts of things with Ella, until the play dates would end, and then it was time to go.
I always had this thing where I couldn't figure out, how can I be so incredibly happy when I'm there with her, and then feel so like I'm just... My heart is broken when I get out of the door, you know? Gosh, I was just dressed up like a bunny, hopping around this house acting crazy, and then I get back in the car and I realize this child is going to die, and I just, you know, cry all the way home. But I'm so, can't wait till the next Tuesday.
So Morgan's an artist, and she loves working with kids.
I paint murals in hospitals.
But really, she works for kids.
In pediatric wards, you know, and that's the most fun, to be able to do the things that are whimsical and happy for little kids. Most of them cancer patients.
I am getting a chemo treatment and 2 injections in my legs. We are in Memorial Clinic.
We're looking at a painting.
The paintings are everywhere. They're on the walls.
And some of them are on ceilings.
They stretch down the halls.
A flower bed with yellow, red, and pink and blue flowers.
A farm, a water fountain.
Spewing out water from every direction.
And they're filled with every kind of color you can imagine.
With all that baby sheep and the goat. And it goes baa, baa.
The chicken on the top of the barn.
Back, 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 chicken.
A person sitting down on a towel raising her hand. She's like, hey, come over here.
And there's better, and there's There's another person down
in the south of Europe!
Everywhere you look, there's another place your mind could wander to.
I imagine being on the yacht.
If there was a white wall, it'll be boring.
I think they make it less boring and exciting.
Whenever I get bored, I always look at it. Like, where would I fit in one of these places? Sometimes I'm at, whenever I see this one.
A baseball field?
I think of my old baseball team.
That's the thing about these kids. The awful contrast between the hard reality of their diseases, because they're really sick, and the soft playfulness of their imaginations.
One of them used to walk up and down the halls with his dad, with his IV, to get his exercise every day, and he'd come by and look at what I was doing, and then one day he said, I think there needs to be an alligator in that pond. I'm like, you know what? You're right. It does.
It's not just the alligators and the sheep and the baseball fields and the flower beds that live within her murals.
And usually somebody that I know ends up being in there somehow, whether it's one of the kids that's in the hospital or some other child that I've taught or something. They just always end up, I paint them and don't realize it. Like Cora, when she got to see herself on the wall, that was fun.
I was painted, yeah.
When Cora was a patient here, Morgan painted her into a mural.
My name is Cora Marie Girola, and I am in Savannah, Georgia right now. I remember that I was a princess riding on a horse.
And she painted a tiara on her head, and she painted her in a pink princess gown, and she painted her riding a horse. I am Mandy Girola, and I am Cora's mom. When Cora was 2, she was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia.
For 10 days, this hospital was their whole world.
And on the ceiling, there was a beautiful mural, and it was a mural of seals. And it was seals playing with balls and seals swimming in the water. And the seals were just kind of like when you laid in the bed, which I laid in the bed with Cora a lot, and it looked like the seals were really swimming all over the ceiling.
Like, I imagine, like, going there, like, if it's of, like, an actual place. And sometimes I think of, like, what's in there, like, if it's a forest, like, what animals and stuff.
And Morgan.
And stuff like
actually
that.
Actually painted Cora into the mural.
And she would come in here to look at me while I'm painting the mural and visit to get away after she did her treatments.
It makes me feel happy because I was in a picture.
I just loved that somebody loved my child that much and would make my little girl feel that special. I think it's weird that Morgan is so passionate about pediatric cancer without having been directly affected by pediatric cancer. In a lot of ways, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. There's been times when I was painting and I thought, oh my gosh, I can't stand it that this is happening and this kid is crying in the next room and they're sick, you know, but maybe they'll see this tomorrow when it's done and think it's funny and they'll laugh or something. I don't know. I would be very dishonest if I said that sometimes I didn't just really think it sucked that they're going through that and I would just cry. Sometimes it's tough, but not as tough as what they're going through. So they need it. They need some fun, you know?
Morgan's murals snake across the hospital walls like ivy, but you'll find them other places too. One's in a local mall. It's gigantic. There's 8 kids dancing sort of like in a parade. One's bald, one's in a wheelchair. And there's this big yellow banner kind of whipping above their heads in the wind. And it says, imagine a world without childhood cancer. And if you look to the right in that painting, there's a little girl on top of a little boy's shoulders. And she's got a big smile on her face, and she has beautiful, bright red hair. And she's holding a palette of paint, and it's dripping all over the place. That's Ella, Morgan's young friend Ella, the one she dressed like a bunny for back in the beginning.
You know, I just like to have her around so people know who she is. That's the first child that didn't have a good prognosis, and, you know, because usually you kind of figure they're going to be okay.
But despite all the magic Morgan created for her, the laughs, the fun, the paint, the costumes, Ella would not be okay.
This is what I really remember about that day. Her mom would always walk me out and tell me bye. And we never really had these like really deep conversations about anything in front of Ella. She walked outside me and closed the door, and she told me like that it was going downhill, you know. And I remember looking at her and going, I can't believe you're telling me this while I have a bunny face on, because I don't know what my face is doing right now. And we both kind of laughed at how awful and weird it was, you know, that I did. I remember that, thinking, I think my heart just broke and my face just fell, but I still have these bunny teeth on my face, and it's weird. That's how it is with these kids. I mean, you know, you got to stay lighthearted and everything, but it really is a real thing, you know, that they really are sick, you know. I don't know. She painted till 2 weeks before she passed away. She could barely hold a paintbrush, and she still painted all the time. So,
that's Morgan Webb, an artist and an art teacher based in Springfield, Georgia. Thanks to the Duane and Cynthia Willett Children's Hospital of Savannah for inviting us in to meet some of their young patients. And that's Everyday Bravery, in sickness and in health, from Prudential. Have any of these stories reminded you of other everyday acts of courage? Who's the bravest person you know? Share your story with us. Look up Prudential on social media and use the hashtag Everyday Bravery. Next time on Everyday Bravery, Monica Ricketts dreamed of being a princess for a very well-known family entertainment company. You know, the one with the mouse as CEO? When she was offered a gig on one of the company's cruise ships, her dream came true. But first, she had to pass the training session. And because it was a cruise ship, that session took place in a pool.
And then the instructor says, "Okay, everyone, time to take off your life vest. We have to tread water for a minute, or else you won't pass." And I break down crying, and I'm like, "I can't swim."
That's next time, when Everyday Bravery goes to work. I'm Meg Wilcox. May you be brave in your everyday life, wherever your heart may take you. Prudential. Bring your challenges.